WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Pennsylvania held its primary earlier this week. Bill Clinton's win was expected, so was George Bush's. The big surprise was Lynn Yackel's victory in the Democratic primary race for the U.S. Senate. She defeated Lieutenant Governor Mark Single and now faces the incumbent Arlen Specter. Yackel had never run for office before. She said that one of the reasons she went into politics was her outrage at the Senate Judiciary Committee's conduct at the Clarence Thomas hearings, as epitomized by Specter's hostile questioning of Anita Hill. A TV commercial that showed her anger was crucial in boosting her recognition and winning support. The commercial was created by my guest, Neil Oxman, a political consultant who specializes in campaign advertisements. His clients have included Al Gore, Alan Cranston, Les Aspin, and Bob Edgar. We invited him to talk about the Yackel ad and some of the controversy surrounding political advertising. Here's the ad. It opens with Specter questioning Anita Hill.
October 11th.
Did you conclude that Judge Thomas was guilty of sexual harassment?
Did this make you as angry as it made me? I'm Lynn Yackel, and it's time we do something about the mess in Washington. I want to put Pennsylvanians back to work, make health care affordable, and keep the government out of personal family decisions. And I want to beat Arlen Specter in November, because where does it say that our senators have to be career politicians like Arlen Specter?
Lynn Yackel for U.S. Senate.
Tell us how you came up with this ad.
Well, it was obvious that I needed to do something to separate Lynn Yackel away from the rest of the Democratic primary field. We had polled in January, and the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania in our poll was somewhere in the mid-20s, and the district attorney of Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, was in the mid-teens, and Lynn Yackel was at 2. And I thought if I ran sort of a traditional campaign and kind of ran against our Democratic primary opponents, I'm not sure it would have gotten us any place because, A, we didn't have enough money, and, B, I don't think it would have done enough to separate her from the rest of the field because there was also another woman in the race. And I took a chance and decided to run against Arlen Specter from the very beginning as a way to perhaps separate her out, and this is the way that we thought about doing it.
Now, she has said that one of the primary reasons she got into the campaign was because she was so outraged at the Clarence Thomas hearings and at Specter's behavior there. Was it you who came up with the idea of using a soundbite from the hearings in the ad?
Yeah, what I wanted to do was I wanted to, just for a second or two, make voters remember what it was last fall that got them angry, A, about the judiciary, B, about the Senate, C, about politicians in Washington generally, and D, specifically about Arlen Specter. And I also had to do that in just a few seconds, and I thought the way to do it was to recreate the scene and put a soundbite from the judiciary hearings at the beginning of an ad.
Now, did you decide where to place the ads once they were made?
Specifically in what programs, you mean?
Yeah, like what time spots, what stations?
Yes, that's what my company does.
Yeah. So what was your strategy with placing those ads?
Well, our strategy was obviously we were just trying to get 40% of the vote. I mean, there are sort of two ways to buy television. There are lots of ways to buy television. One way is to buy what's called reach, which means you perhaps buy a few shows that have a great deal of audience appeal, whether it's 60 Minutes or Roseanne. The shows are very, very expensive. And, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, as Lynn Yackel really didn't, one of the great misnomers in the campaign was that Lynn Yackel bought the election. She actually only spent $505,000 on television, and her chief opponent, who was leading her, spent more money. Mark Single spent closer to $600,000 on television. So what we decided to do, instead of doing what was called reach, we did a buy that was called frequency. We took a certain audience. For us, the audience was a lot of women 35 plus as well as men 35 plus, and decided to run the ad a great many times aimed at those people, all within a budget of things that we could afford, whether it was Donahue in the morning or Oprah in the afternoon or Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune in Access and a great deal of the early news. We sort of targeted out a select audience and said, we're going to reach you a lot of times and hope that we can drive home this message.
You know, the day after the election, I was listening to interviews with all kinds of experts saying whether Lynn Yackel should play up women's issues or play down women's issues. And it was almost amusing hearing all these people, you know, advising her from afar on both sides of that. I wonder, as someone who did her campaign ads, if you think the word feminism is a no-no in the campaign.
No, I don't. I mean, I've heard people say it in a pejorative tone, and I think if they try to do that this fall, we are going to make that a mistake on our opponent's part, whether it's the press saying it in some sarcastic way, because, you know, a number of reporters have said it to me, and or our opponents who, if they try to label Lynn a feminist, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that word. I think that word is perfectly acceptable. And I think if somebody tries to use it in an unacceptable way, they will find out that women and men in Pennsylvania will be very upset. Another untold story about Lynn Yackel is that she won a plurality of the male vote on Tuesday.
When you say use the word feminism in an unacceptable way, what would an example of that be?
Well, you know, somebody trying to say, and Arlen Specter has already done this, that Lynn Yackel is a single-issue candidate who ran on one issue, and the sort of code is there that she's a feminist. I mean, other unnamed Republicans in newspapers have said that. I don't think they're going to get away with it.
Political consultant Neil Oxman is my guest. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Neil Oxman is my guest, and he does political advertising, and he did the advertisements for the Lynn Yackel campaign. I think it'll be no news to you that a lot of Americans profess to just really hate political advertisements because it cheapens politics to the level of selling toothpaste. How do you defend political ads?
I don't necessarily defend them, but as long as there's a First Amendment and as long as we don't have a British system where the British have this system that has some flaws and some merits, where each of the parties is given 10 minutes a week for a party broadcast, and in a sense they are political advertising. It's just 10 minutes long. Until the networks change, I'm not going to defend them. I'm just going to use them because I believe in my clients and I want to see them get elected. Until we have a system where everybody has a chance to talk to voters. The way you talk to voters is through television, and the way we should do that is the network should be offering, both locally for local candidates and nationally, offering much more free time to candidates to air their views. But you know why it's not going to happen, Terry?
What do you think?
The reason it's not going to happen is because the $500 or $600 or $700 million a year that political campaigns and candidates spend both nationally and in spot advertising around America, the television stations will never give it up.
You've done some negative ads for your clients. How do you decide whether you should be doing a negative ad or an ad just kind of selling the strengths of your client?
A lot of it is just experience. I mean, we've done almost 200 campaigns. We've mm-hmm. made about 5,000 commercials. It changes all the time. It changes. We're doing campaigns this year in over 20 states. And what's acceptable in the northeastern part of the United States is sometimes not acceptable in the Midwest or the South. A lot of it is just experience. The climate that's going on at a certain point, the dialogue that's happening in the campaign, the way the press is treating the campaign. Sometimes you do it in polling, but and sometimes it's just a gut feel. I mean, it's hard to say that there's a cookie cutter answer to why you use negative ads.
Did you ever have a negative ad backfire?
In the sense that it never cost us an election or a client ever dropped precipitously in the polls. We've had, interestingly, when you put negative spots on the air, you know who complains the most? Your own supporters. I mean, my clients always tell me when they're out campaigning and we run positive ads, how much people come up to them and say, hey, great, I saw you on television. But as soon as we put negative ads on the air, it's our own supporters who say to the candidates, why are you doing that? You don't need to say it. And my answer is Mike Dukakis didn't respond for over a month to the Willie Horton and Boston Harbor ads and dropped a 17-point lead into losing an election that was absolutely winnable. So it's always hard to make the client buck up to the fact that some people will be angry, but in certain situations you have to do it. A, you either have to attack, or B, you have to respond when you are attacked.
Do you always respond when a client of yours is attacked in a negative ad?
Mark Singel attacked Lynn Yackel at 12:27 a week ago Wednesday in an ad on local Philadelphia television. And at 6 o'clock that last night, we had finished making an ad that was a response, and it was in Federal Express. I mean, so literally, not only sometimes do you have to respond, but you do it in a matter of hours.
How often do you turn down candidates who want to hire you to do ads for them?
Every year somebody does. I mean, Republicans ask us. We don't do Republicans. And you know, every year there's somebody that, you know, that either you don't like, or you don't like their politics, or you're too busy, you know, or you're doing something else. Mostly the reason we don't do people who ask us is because we don't agree with them politically or philosophically.
Now, I believe you represented Wilson Good during his first successful campaign for mayor in Philadelphia, but I believe you turned him down for his reelection bid. How come?
Well, Wilson, who I was very proud of working for when he beat Frank Rizzo in 1983, which at least in Philadelphia was a very seminal event for a lot of things, and really made, I think, for a year the city feel great about itself, had trouble with dropping a bomb in something that I think viewers nationally know as the move event. I thought that Wilson should stand down, and I think that his second term ended up being just a disaster. And Ed Rendell, who had been the district attorney of Philadelphia, was a friend of mine, and I did his campaign to beat Wilson in 87. It's the only time I've ever worked against anybody. I feel very proud of the fact that I did, because Rendell, even though he lost and lost badly, was endorsed by both major editorial boards of the two major newspapers in Philadelphia, and I think acquitted himself well. And then I was lucky enough to work for him in 1991 when he was elected mayor in his own right.
What are the best and worst ads that you've seen during the presidential primary?
I don't want to say necessarily the worst. I think the best ad in the presidential primary was clearly the ad that Pat Buchanan did about taxes in New Hampshire. I have lectured at Oxford. That's patting myself on the back. But in 1989, I was a fellow at Oxford. And this past winter, the professor I lectured with over there asked me to come back just for a day to show all the ads that were being shown in New Hampshire. And I did that the week before the New Hampshire primary. I showed a group of British and American students at Oxford about 35 ads that had aired. And the one that clearly got the best response was the Pat Buchanan ad, where George Bush began by saying, you know, read my lips, no new taxes. And Pat Buchanan rebutted that. I think that's the best ad that worked. Of course, Buchanan's candidacy hasn't gone anyplace since. But that ad was very inexpensive to produce. It looked horrible, but it had the best message, and it got right to people's brains in New Hampshire.
What's the best ad that you think you've come up with, and the most ineffective ad that you think you've done?
There have been hundreds of ineffective ads. I think the best ad I ever wrote was a 60-second bio ad I did for Ed Rendell in reintroducing him to the voters of Philadelphia in February of 1991. Ed Rendell had lost a governor's race to Bob Casey in a Democratic primary in 1986, had lost a mayoral primary in 1987. A lot of people told him he was dead and he couldn't run again. And I did a 60-second bio ad that took all the negatives about Ed Rendell and essentially turned them to positives. And Ed, who was really not ahead in the polls at that point by very much, that ad gave him about a 20-point poll lead, and we never looked back. And I think that was sort of the best producing and the best writing that my company did.
An example of a negative that you turned into a positive?
Well, the fact that everybody said, you know, Rendell lost the mayor's race in 1987. He's a loser. What we said in the ad was he was the only one to stand up to the mess in City Hall. The newspapers agreed and endorsed him for mayor. And what we were talking about was how he stood up to Wilson Good in 1987. And that way that a very quiet voice read in a very dramatic way with pictures, I think really worked.
Were you ever persuaded to vote for somebody or to vote against somebody because of an ad that you saw on TV?
Yes.
What was the ad?
The ad was an ad done in 1978 for Dick Thornburgh, who was the Republican nominee for governor of Pennsylvania. He was running against a man named Pete Flaherty, who was the mayor of Pittsburgh, who was running as the Democratic nominee. And Dick Thornburgh's ad, which was done by a couple of Republicans named Doug Bailey and John Deardorff, who were two of the best Republicans who do this in the United States. At the end of the ad, it said this. They were talking about Flaherty's record as mayor of Pittsburgh. At the end of the ad, an announcer we used to call Knees said this. So the question is this. Can the man who took Pittsburgh to its knees bring Pennsylvania to its feet? The one man who can is Dick Thornburgh. And we always called that announcer Knees afterwards, whom I since met. But that ad made me decide I'm not voting for Pete Flaherty, and I'm a fairly staunch Democrat. I did not vote for Pete Flaherty for governor of Pennsylvania in 1978.
Well, why did that ad convince you?
Well, I mean, it was really the substance of the ad that went before it in terms of how bad a mayor Flaherty really was. I mean, I was on the fence because I thought Flaherty was running a bad campaign. And when I saw the ad, I decided, that's it. That's crystallized it for me. I can't vote for him. I'm going to do something very strangely for me. I'm going to vote Republican. And a lot of Democrats did that year, and Thornburgh got elected.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Media consultant Neil Oxman. His company, The Campaign Group, is based in Philadelphia. This is Fresh Air.